Glad to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Shirley Bauman. Shirley's an auctioneer, a certified appraiser, works out of Madison area, but actually she works all over the state doing things, one thing and another, appraising and auctioneering. Two websites, BaumanAuctions.com and HeirloomAppraisers.com. So really pleased to have her with us today to talk about antiques and appraisals. You have a question, join us at 800-642-1234, email at talk@WPR.org. Love to hear from you. Shirley, welcome back.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
You just finished appraising the holdings of Poupon U.
You bet.
and the other parts of the Mustard Museum. That must have been kind of fun.
Mustard Museum, right. The National Mustard Museum, as they're being called now in their move to Middleton. It was fun. It was just a real pleasure to do that. And it was a very interesting appraisal. As I went in there, you know, I had no problem with the antique mustard pots and the antique advertising and tins and that sort of thing, because I do that regularly. But then I had to think about, how am I going to do 5,200 jars of prepared mustard?
different types.
Different types. And, you know, they weren't purchased for their mustard necessarily. They were a collection for another reason. So I could look at them and I could say, well, this one they bought for $3 and this one $7 and this one $18, so we could average them. But that's not really their value.
Right.
So I had to use the concept of what we call in place and in use. So the place that they were kept is a museum. It wasn't in someone's private home or private collection.
Right.
They were in a place meant for the public. And what was their use? As a collection, to be shown to the public, to encourage people to come to that community that they're in, to encourage people to come to the facility to see them, and hopefully you'll leave a few dollars behind. Mm-hmm. So they had an economic value and even a little bit of a tourism value. Mm-hmm. So what I did is I did that. I took a sampling of the jars and averaged them, and then I picked out a percentage that I increased them by for the concept of that they were, where they were used and for what purpose.
Must have been, so you have to be a mathematician a little bit along the way,
yes,
too.
Yes, calculators you? Help.
Especially when you've got 5,000 jars of mustard mm-hmm. to work about. Oh, man. Chuck at Viroqua emailed us. He's got some old magazine, mostly in the 1940s and 50s. Mm-hmm. What interest is there in an old issue of the Saturday Evening Post and Collier's, for example?
Well, they do have some collector interest, and of course a lot of collectors like them a little bit earlier than the 50s. But those in the 40s and 50s now, as we're getting into, you know, that's mid-last century. I actually bought a whole building full of books and paper at one time, and I had a lot of magazines in there. And they went for about the $7 to $10 range on those Collier's magazines. Saturday Evening Post about that. A lot of what people are interested in are the illustrations and the advertising. Some of those older magazines had some famous artists do the illustrations back in those days, and they later became famous, like Louis Eichardt. Andrew Loomis, these people did a lot of work back then for, and you want to look at that on the cover. They usually sign their work on the cover. Or if there was a book excerpt and a continuation, you know, they'd do a book and do it in each month. They'd do a chapter or something, and they'd have usually some original illustration with that. And the advertisements, you know, from the 1940s, they might be showing, oh, a soldier going home on a Greyhound bus, you know, from the war mm-hmm. years and things. And people who collect military things and collect Greyhound things would go for that. And those ads, if they're a full-page color ad in perfect condition, might go for $5, $6, $7 a piece. And I did that when I had some that are destroyed, you know, they were damaged. Mm-hmm. So I could take out the good ads and you can sell those for, you know, especially when they're well-known products.
So there can be
some good you know, value in them.
Well, let's do another email. Lisa in La Crosse emailed to ask if you were familiar with stoneware from, I think it's Roshek's Department Store, R-O-S-H-E-K, Roshek's Department Store, mm-hmm. Probably in La Crosse.
Actually, that department store was in Dubuque.
Dubuque, Iowa.
And it was started in the Depression years. And the store was, at that time, they built onto it in the 30s. They started it in 29, built on in the 30s. It ended up being a 10-story, half-block building.
Wow.
It was known as the biggest department store in the state of Iowa, and it had quite a history for a long time. The building is still there, but it's used as an office building now. It was probably from those days in the 30s when a lot of merchants had their name printed on stoneware, and they gave them away as gifts, say, at Christmas time or to their best customers. And a lot of times we see little crocks and beater jars, what they call them, which has the round bottom, not the squared out bottom inside, or little pitchers or that kind of thing, and plates, or, you know, round plates that
sure.
can hang. And I've not seen Roshek ones particularly, but, you know, with being in Iowa, it's probably made by Red Wing Union Stoneware up in Red Wing, Minnesota. They weren't the only one who made those, but they made a lot of them that you see around here.
Okay.
And it depends on how they're decorated as what their value is. But we see some of them going, you know, in, if they're, you know, they could be going between $50 and $150, depending okay. on who made them and how they're decorated. And the best place to sell them is close to the location of where they were from. Because
oh,
people
sure.
like to collect things from their hometown or
well, sure.
Where they grew up or where grandma lived or something like that. So the bidding usually gets higher at auction when you're near the location.
It's Kristen in Milwaukee has a question for you. Hi, Kristen. Kristen, wait a second here. Can we get you on there? Oh, here. Now we've got you. Kristen, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a Dopey doll from the 1930s. You know, one of the seven dwarfs.
Yeah.
That was my father's. It sits about 6 inches high. It's made out of very hard rubber, and it's colorful. I'm just wondering what it's worth.
Did you say what period?
It's probably from the 30s.
30s.
My dad was born in 22, and I think it probably came out when the movie came out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Recently, I did an appraisal, and the gentleman who owned these items was very much a Disney collector. And we saw a number of those hard rubber sets and porcelain and every other material sets of Snow White and the dwarfs. And they were usually in the whole set. So it matters. Are there any other marks on it?
I think it has a Disney mark on the bottom, okay. but I'm not at home, so
okay.
I don't know.
You want to make sure it has a Disney mark on, so it's genuine. You want to know if it's, you know, manufactured by somebody else. But a hard rubber in a 6-inch Dopey alone, or any one of the dwarves alone, isn't going to be particularly valuable. Sets can be up in the $100 range, so this is maybe, you know, alone, maybe $10, $12 alone as an individual one. It's really interesting. When I did this appraisal I just mentioned, there was a set of the dwarves from Russia.
Oh.
And they were marked in Russian on the bottom.
Oh.
And I took them to a person I know from Russia who lives here now, and she speaks the language. And she picked it up, and she looked under it, and she said, I think it's a name. It's something like Slothful. So we figured it was Sleepy.
That's a great story. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Well, thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks, Kristen. Sylvia in Greenfield, hello to you.
Hello. Thanks again for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about a Tony doll.
Okay.
She's probably from the middle 50s, maybe a little earlier. She's got her original yellow dress. I've got the little box of the perm with the rollers. And I don't know if she's worth anything or not. Her hair's in pretty good shape. I didn't do much with it.
You didn't give her that perm, huh?
Not too much.
Well, this is an advertising doll, and she advertised those Tony permanents.
Right.
For the listeners who might not have caught that. And in the 50s, they made a doll that was, you know, made for that and had all of those things with. And it's, you know, just like today, it's a marketing thing. But
sure.
it's collected by both advertising people and collectors of dolls. So you've got, again, a cross-collectible, that's what we call mm-hmm. that. And it's a wonderful you know, slice of advertising. In pretty good shape like that. She's probably in the $75 range, give or take, you know, without seeing her. I think she was a composition doll, made of composition.
Yes, card stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And
well, maybe so, $7,500 bucks.
Yeah.
So where would I go with it to sell it?
Yes. I hear that question a lot when they get this these numbers, then how can I sell them? Right now, a lot, if you have one item like that, a lot of people find good success on the internet.
Like Craigslist or?
Craigslist or eBay or one of those other auction sites that are coming up now that are kind of competing with eBay.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, give it a try. And good luck, Sylvia. Thank you very much for calling. She has an idea now of kind of what she might get for it and how she could price it. David in Richland Center, on to you. Hi, David.
Well, hello. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a family chest. It's a horizontal wooden chest. The story is that it came to the United States with the Arnold family in the mid-1800s, maybe 1830, 1850, something like that. It's elaborately carved and has metal fixtures. And was used, we think, for clothes and bedding, to store clothes and bedding on the ship as it came over from Europe.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not so interested in the value, the monetary value. I'm just wondering whether this family story is true. Is there some way to check the authenticity of such a chest?
Well, there are, but it can be kind of involved and complicated, so it depends on how much you want it. Want to do this. Let me ask a question on the wood. Is it painted?
Or no, it's not. It's it looks as if there may have been a varnish, but in my lifetime, which is 67 years, it's always looked the same to me. It's never...
Okay.
The people who have had it in our family have never painted it or varnished it or changed it in any way.
That's a good thing.
Well, you're right. Not changing it is a very good thing. One of the things that I would do with a chest like that first, just on my own, is take a flashlight and look at it really closely, inside and out. And sometimes, you know, the names were on there, and they've just become so worn. If you don't look at it in extremely good light, you can't even see it.
Uh-huh.
The other way, did this family settle in Wisconsin?
Yes, they settled in Milwaukee first and then moved to Oshkosh, where they made quite a name for themselves in different ways.
Well, I guess I would start by looking with the Historical Society.
The Oshkosh Public Museum, is that the kind of place?
That might be a place to start, or the state one, or Milwaukee might have some records if that's where they came in. Now, exactly how you're going to trace it to that family, that's tough. But if you can find out that that family came, they settled here, you know anything about them, you might be able, you know, if the Historical Society has any photographs.
That's what I was thinking.
You might actually see it in a photograph.
Oh.
With the family.
With the family, yeah.
There are photographs of family members at both those places, but I don't remember any pictures of furnishings.
Yeah. Well, this would have been what they traveled with.
Right. That's the story anyway.
Right. It was kind of like today's suitcase, so it probably wouldn't have been out in their living room or, you know, it would have been maybe in a bedroom or hidden, you know.
Yes.
It was, you know, like we wouldn't have our suitcases and luggage out in the living room. So that's a way to look for those things is through photographs and seeing if there's any particular records of even what they brought over.
Mm-hmm.
With them, and the historical societies would know that.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, David. Appreciate your call. Talking antiques, appraisals, and auctions today with Shirley Bauman, auctioneer, certified appraiser. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have a question as we talk antiques and appraisals and auctions for our guest, Shirley Bauman, I hope you'll join us. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. Let's turn to Doreen in Sullivan next. Doreen, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Shirley, last week at a rummage sale, I purchased a little doll. She's about 5 inches tall. she's a actually she's kind of a soft, rubbery substance, and on the back there's a triangle, and I think it says ARI, and then Germany DP. Hmm. My question is, first of all, you can tell she's been very played with. She's real dirty. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm kind of worried about cleaning her, like what to clean her with. And my main question is there any way of finding out what kind of clothing she had? Because she came, she's naked.
Ah.
But on the back, it's hard, Shirley, to see if it says ARI or AD, Germany DP.
Yeah. You probably want to magnify that. It's probably at the base of her neck in the back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get a good magnifier. I actually use a jeweler's loop to look at those letters.
Okay.
And you might even need a little flashlight to shine some really good light on it. A rubbery soft, it's hard to say what the material is.
But should I clean on her or no? Should
well,
I leave her kind of dirty and worn? I don't know.
Well, what I would try is first just take a damp cloth.
Okay.
And just start gently rubbing on some areas that wouldn't show too much.
Okay.
You know, on her back or whatever that might be under clothing later and see what you can do. Some of the, if that works great, sometimes a very clean, soft white eraser will work on some of those kind of marks.
Okay.
Again, start in an inconspicuous spot very gently.
Okay.
And there's one other thing I've heard, and I've not tried this before, but I've been told that if you take a piece of the soft white bread, you know, that kids love and adults would hate to eat, you know, the Wonder Bread kind of thing, and rub that on there, that'll pick up some of the surface dirt.
Now, Shirley, is there any website or anything that you know of that I could somehow, when I figure out what it actually all says on the back, you know, of going back and, like, seeing what, the, you know, the older dolls from Germany look like?
There are some on the web, and I don't know exactly, but when you get those letters and you see what they are, put in that information and then put in doll, Germany, and that, and
into the search engine.
Into the search engine, and you'll probably get a good listing of those.
Yeah, because she definitely needs some clothes. My girlfriend's a good seamstress, so she's like, gee, if we could find out what she kind of wore, I could make a duplicate.
Sure.
She's just darling. She's so cute.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
well, sounds like
you
got a little treasure.
Thanks a lot for calling. Dave and Augusta, on to you now. Hi, Dave.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call, Larry.
Sure.
Good morning, Shirley. I've got a I've got a milk bottle. It's from the McFarland Dairy Plant. It's not McFarland, Wisconsin. I think it might be Black River Falls. It's a quart size. It's got the cap on it, the original cap. It's in perfect condition. Any idea what that might be worth or what the history of that is?
And the printing, is it printed in color on the side of the bottle or is it just embossed?
It is in black.
Black printing in there.
Yeah.
And it's a quart. Well, for a while, milk bottles were pretty sought after and they kind of have gone out of favor a little bit as a collectible. So in terms of prices, they've gone down a bit. You know, antiques are a market that goes up and down. And, again, that's the kind of thing that if you sold it, for example, it's more valuable in the location. So if it were Black River Falls, people from Black River Falls might be really interested in it rather than people around another part of the state or a different state even. Milk bottles right now aren't generally bringing $20 or less.
Yeah.
Unless, you know, this was, for example, a dairy that was there for a short time, very famous, very well known, went defunct. There's some unique story to it and there aren't many bottles around, then it might be a little different story.
You bet. Thank you so much.
All right.
You're welcome.
So much for calling. And, you know, with the sometimes a person with a last name of McFarland.
Yes, they collect things with their own names on it.
You know, I've got to share an office here part of the time with Jim Packard, and Jim Packard's got all kinds of Packard automobile signs and so forth that people have handed down to him or handed on to him.
And somebody might just assume that he was an heir to the fortune of the Packards then.
He says no.
He says no. Okay.
He was he is heir to the Packers Poppers fortune.
Oh.
They were popcorn. His family made and sold popcorn. Packers, great. Packards Poppers.
Packers Poppers.
Teresa in Brookfield, it's on to you now. Hi, Teresa.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
When my father passed away about 20 years ago, a couple of things that he left in my keeping were some very, very large, almost about the size of a charger plate, a decorated gold plates that he got in England in the 50s. One of the plates actually is a white, like a porcelain with some blue, almost looks like birds or something, and they're very large plates. And I have absolutely no idea what to do with these. They're kind of packed away in a box.
Would you say they were 12 inches in diameter or 20 inches? Or
I would say they are probably, at least 12, maybe 14.
Okay.
They're a really good size. They're not the one, the Norman Rockwells that hang on the wall, although I have a few of those too that I don't know what to do with. but these are, one of them is a lot of gold decorative, and it's, I've thought about you just using them and putting a clear plate on top of them. But one mm-hmm. came along with an old antique magazine that said something about Bird of Paradise or something to that effect, an old magazine that had a picture of this one white with a little blue, leaves or flowers or something on it.
Mm-hmm.
And you still have that magazine?
I do.
Okay.
And I don't know where to take it or what to do with it, because they are collecting dust.
Have you looked at the underside of the plate to see if there's a marking on that?
I believe there is, but I don't recall offhand. I'm at work.
Okay. Well, that's really the important part. If you've got a marking on it, we can tell who manufactured it and approximately when, because manufacturers use different marks usually for different periods. Maybe for 15 years they used a mark in green and then they changed to red, or they added a crown or changed something about mm-hmm. it. So that helps us determine who made it and when, and that's really important information. Now, it's not the only information. Looking at the plate, we can see how well it's decorated. And magnifying it, we can see if it's hand-painted or kind of transfer decorated.
Okay.
So that'll all make a difference. You know, a transfer will have a little dot pattern in it.
Okay.
And when you look at the hand, you know, if it was hand-painted, you could actually see the brush strokes in the paint under magnification. You know, a good glass. So again, I use the jeweler's loop to see that.
Okay. And where can I take that to?
For what purpose?
To
appraise or sell?
Okay. Well, those are two different things.
Yeah.
If you want it appraised, you can find an appraiser through the I always tell people to go to the websites of the professional appraisal organizations, which are International Society of Appraisers, AAA American Appraisers of America, I think, and Appraisal Association of America, ASA. And you can search for an appraiser by specialty and by location, and you might find one in your area that seems to fit that.
Probably would in Brookfield.
Yeah.
Okay.
So. And then they can take a look at it. But an appraiser should not be the person to buy things.
Okay.
Because there's, you know, the possibility for conflict of interest. You know, they might tell you, oh, this is only worth $25. I'll buy it from you for that, when it's really worth $250. So it's just an ethical thing to stay away from an appraiser buying it.
Okay. And if I would want to sell it, other than eBay, which mm-hmm. everything goes for $3, I'm seeing on eBay. I thought about putting it on eBay.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't know the value, so wouldn't even know what to ask for, and they, you know.
Okay. Well, if you find an appraiser in your area, they might have a good idea for you. And it all depends on what you really have. If you find out you have something very special and valuable, they might be, there's some antique shops that will take things on consignments. There are auctioneers who will take things and put it in their auctions. You know, if they're valuable enough. If it's an ordinary plate, like, for example, you'd mentioned those Norman Rockwell plates, which maybe will bring $5 or mm-hmm. less a plate, they probably wouldn't take three or four of those. It just wouldn't be worth their time.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to be worth a certain value to do that. And, you know, you can advertise it, do the Craigslist thing or advertise in the newspaper. Or some antique shops keep lists of dealers who buy antiques. Mm. And, of course, they'll buy them in such a way that they can, you know, resell them and make some money. So you need to keep that in mind. But those are ways to part with smaller lots
pieces
of things.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Thanks, Teresa. Mike in Oshkosh, we're on to you now. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Good morning. Hi, Shirley. How are you?
Hi. Good. Thank you.
Okay. I just have a quick question, and I hope I'm not being too vague. I picked up some action figurines at a rummage sale. One was a G.I. Joe doll. And the copyright on it, or the registered, was, I believe, from 1964. And by the looks of his, you know, the way his hair is and the dress, you know, kind of seems like that doll actually was from the, you know, 64 or so. And then I also have a Michael Jackson doll, you know, kind of action figure with, you know, like five sets of clothes and that kind of stuff. Just wonder if there's any value in those. And also, I have a bunch of Barbie dolls that I had bought. And some say made in USA and some said made in China. And I was just kind of trying to keep my eye out for the original, the first year
one. First one, yes. That's the one that's got the big value in that first year. All of them probably have some value. But the G.I. Joes were something that, again, were popular and collectible a little while ago, and they've gone down in value. There still are some that were really hard to find, and you kind of have to look up the list of G.I. Joe and values to know which one you have. And sometimes it's just the clothing or accessories that make a difference. In the Ken doll that goes along with Barbie, for example, they like to have the yachting outfit because it had a little cap, like a boating cap, and that often was lost. And so when you have that, you know, people pay a little more for that with that outfit.
But, like the Michael Jackson I have, you know, comes with a couple sets of that, the silver glove and that red leather jacket he was popular for. And,
sure. I'm not sure on value of Michael Jackson, but all those little accessories, keep close watch on those because they do make a difference. With his death, they might be quite collectible.
This might be the time to sell.
This might be the time.
Well, and the one thing I want to ask, the head on it, okay, at some point in time, it must have broken off, and I can see where they had glued it.
That will affect its value, definitely.
But the accessory still might be worth something to somebody, huh?
Yes, yeah. Yes, they might. And I don't know off the top of my head, but that's the way it is. As far as the Barbie dolls, look at on their lower backs, and it should say made by Mattel.
Okay.
And if they're not made by Mattel, then they're not the genuine Barbies. And I don't know if they actually, Mattel had a Chinese factory making them for them or not, but you want them to be to have the Mattel mark.
All right.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Mike. And Lynn in Wauwatosa, we move to you. Hi, Lynn.
Hi. How are you this morning?
All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much for the show. It's very interesting. I have a question, more a general question about a collection that I have of antique handbags. I've been collecting for many, many years and have quite a large collection going back, the earliest ones from the late 1700s.
Oh, my.
And I have, I'm not that old, but I'm thinking I should make out some kind of a will or so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to know if you have any ideas about donating this collection to a museum or to, or where it might, you know, go, mm-hmm. that it isn't just broken up and sold. My children appreciate it, but they are not that interested in keeping it other than maybe a few for sentimental reasons. But as an entire collection, I'd like it to go somewhere where it's appreciated. Do you have any ideas on that?
Well, I would have to do a little research, but there are definitely museums that do have collections of textiles and clothing, vintage clothing and accessories.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I know I saw a wonderful exhibit of what you're talking about from that period, women's foundations, they mm-hmm. called them, which are undergarments. And that was in Atlanta, mm-hmm. and the Atlanta Art Museum, I believe it was. And there's another one in Cincinnati, I think, that has really focuses on that. Clothing and textiles.
So okay. It's a Cincinnati Museum of some sort.
Yeah, probably. And some historical museums. Do you know who any of these bags belong to?
No, okay. I don't. They're from, I've just gotten them.
Collect them over the years.
Over 50 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Sure.
Well, if you have access to the internet.
Yes.
Search for museums with textiles, vintage clothing, mm-hmm. and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you will find some major museums
right.
that have holdings with that. And I think they would be interested, especially in them, since you're saying as old as they are, I think you will have some interest in that. And if you do donate them to the museum, you want to get them appraised first, and then you can take that donation value off of your taxes.
Well, this would be something that would be done by my... heirs.
Your estate, sure. part of your estate.
So
sure.
I'm going to keep it as long as I'm around. But
sure, sure. But it would be nice for you to have instructions for them to
right.
know what
yeah,
to do.
Yeah, it's very difficult to get any kind of value. I've tried before. I think through study over all the years, I probably know as much as anyone about the values of them. So mm-hmm. it's kind of hard. I don't. Do you know of anyone that evaluates textiles at all or?
Well, you know, there's a number of people who do that, and I certainly do some of that.
Okay.
And here at the University of Wisconsin, they have a wonderful textiles department.
Yes.
Right, right.
And they might be able to have some information for you.
Okay.
And Winterthur Museum has a lot in Delaware, has okay. a lot of this kind of thing as well.
Okay.
All right.
I'm making notes.
Okay.
All right. Good luck.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Lynn, for calling. Appreciate it. Ross in Gotham, it's your turn. Hi.
Yes, good morning, and thanks for having me on your show.
Sure.
I'm restoring an old blanket box, and it has a lot of varnish over some beautiful hand-painted work, and it's muted it out to the point where it's very difficult to see that the painting underneath. It's almost a dark, opaque over the substrate where the beautiful paintings are. And what I'm wondering is if there's a process that can be used to take that top coat off without destroying the beautiful paintings underneath.
I know exactly what you're trying to do, and I have a pretty good picture of what it looks like. Those varnishes did get dark, and you'll see that even on like a rocking chair when you can clean that yeah. varnish off, you see suddenly the grain shows. And there is a product I've used before. I've gotten it just from a hardware store, and it's a Formbeast product, and they call it Refinisher.
Okay.
Now, not stripper. Mm-hmm. You're not stripping the finish. It's a refinisher, and what it does is it takes off that top layer of varnish, but you have to use it very sparingly, and you know, just try it on an inconspicuous spot and get used to working with it, because you want to be real light with it.
Okay.
And just take off that layer of varnish.
Okay. I have another question if you'd allow me. In restoring this old blanket box, it had come apart, and I've had to repair it. And I noticed that it was actually put together with wooden nails. And I've never seen wooden nails. I've heard of things being doweled and pinned together, but this came apart, and it was actually looked like a flat nail about 2.5 inches long that was driven into a hole to bind this and hold it together. And I was wondering if you have seen this, and if that would help date this when it was built, or possibly where it was built. Does that ring any bells with you, Shirley?
Well, I have there. It is a form of a peg, just a very small peg piece. And yes, it can help date and possibly pinpoint the location or the general area. I just don't know off the top of my head. I'd have to do some research on that.
Mm-hmm.
But that sounds like a pretty early piece.
One other thing. This had some wrought iron hinges on it, on the top, and one of the hinges had been replaced, but I think the other hinge was probably the original. In keeping with the period, I would guess that I would want to try to reproduce that original hinge, mm-hmm, to make, yeah, this thing, to bring it back as completely to original as I possibly can. Are you aware of someone that does the wrought iron hinges in the Madison area?
Well, not off the top, but what you want to look for is a blacksmith.
Okay.
And was it a long metal hinge, long strap,
long,
or just a
small one? I want to say about 4 inches in both directions, and
yep,
it was on the inside of the box.
Yeah, that's called a strap hinge.
Yes.
And I'd look for a blacksmith.
Okay, mm-hmm, I can do that.
All okay. right, good luck. Thank you, Ross, for calling. Appreciate it. And Steve emailed and has a musket from the Civil War that belonged to an ancestor of his who served in Camp Randall in 1864. The musket is a Springfield with the date 1859 on it, and it's a muzzle loader with a flint chamber on the side of the stock. Also have an ancestor's company and regiment pins. Any idea what the musket might be worth?
Those are things we have to look at carefully, because a lot of times there were some adjustments made to the hammer or the mechanisms in it. So we do have to look at that. And not too long ago, I appraised a Springfield musket, and it did have a little bit of alteration to it, and it was in about the $3,000 range.
Okay.
For that one. And again,
that one.
So we'll
potentially,
have to look at it.
Yeah.
The condition makes a difference. It's great that you know who had it and when, because if, for example, collectors just love that information, and it helps sell the item.
Oh, sure.
And, of course,
because you want to be able to talk about it when, you know,
right,
when somebody looks at it, and you can say, well, that belonged to so-and-so.
And they were at Camp Randall and this,
yeah,
and that. Civil War is the most collected. And so these pins you're talking about, I don't know exactly what you had, but
regiment pins
and
company
things.
And regiment pins. Yeah,
yeah. They can bring good money. They're very collectible, but for Civil War and military collectors, sometimes we see just uniform buttons going for quite a lot. Not seeing them, I can't give you a real value, but I wouldn't be a bit surprised if they're somewhere in the $50 to $75, maybe $100 a piece.
No. So with that, we're out of time, Shirley. You know,
it always goes so fast.
It goes really fast. And if you're interested in talking some more with Shirley or taking a look at what she's got online, you can go to Bauman Auctions. And Bauman is B-A-U-M-A-N-N, two N's there. BaumanAuctions.com. Or go online to heirloomappraisal.com, all one word, of course.
Yes.
Shirley, it is always a pleasure. Thanks so much. I hope you'll come back.
Oh, thank you. It's always so much fun to hear what people have in their homes and what treasures they have.
There's lots out there, and of course we didn't even get to half of the ones that we could have. But she'll be back, and we'll talk with her again. Thank you, Shirley.
You bet.
Coming up, we're going to be talking about bird feeding and the art of attracting birds. Steve Bechkal of Eau Claire joins us next on the Ideas Network.